Proverbs chapter 12. Glad you guys ventured out tonight. I appreciate my family, but I'm glad to have other people besides them here. But anyway, Proverbs chapter 12 is where we're at, and we left off with verse number 7 last week. And so we're still in this section of Proverbs that is kind of just standalone thoughts, so to speak, just little nuggets of wisdom from the wisest man that's lived, of course, under the inspiration of God. And rather than review over them, I'm going to go ahead and just pick up at verse number 8, and we're going to go through these one at a time and just kind of look at them and try to glean the wisdom from them. But the purpose in these, as Solomon is laying them out to his children, is to convey this wisdom, to try to make wise men out of his sons, to impart this wisdom in them so that they're able to make good decisions, so that they're able to be godly leaders. And of course, history tells us that his son Rehoboam didn't necessarily avail of the wisdom that was available to him. But that is an unfortunate thing. But the great thing is that even though Rehoboam didn't listen, we have them before us today that we can look at, we can read through, and we can understand and learn how God has ordered things, how God has put the world together, how God intends for it to operate. And so that's one of the important things for us to learn about Proverbs, is that these statements are general ideas about how things should work, how things should be done. I've said from the very beginning, we don't want to take a proverb and make it a promise. Some people claim them as promises. But as we look at these proverbs, they're general ideas of, if you put these things into practice in your life, chances are you're going to have a good outcome. There may be exceptions to it once in a while, but they're going to be the exception. And so as we look at these, go ahead and look with me at verse number 8. It says, "A man shall be commended according to his wisdom, but he that is of a perverse heart shall be despised." And so we have basically a wise man and a fool, a perverse man, contrasted here. And whenever it says that a wise man shall be commended, that means he's going to be praised. People are going to praise a man for his wisdom, not for his foolishness. A fool might be entertaining, right? We might enjoy laughing at a fool, or even their companionship at times can be entertaining. But at the end of the day, it's not the fool that we are striving to be like. It's not this fool that is praiseworthy. It's not the fool that men are going to remember and going to commend, but instead a person who is of a wise and understanding heart. That is the one that is going to be praised, because they are going at life with integrity. They are going at life with purpose, with a meaning. They are treating people well. A wise man is going to treat people well. And so a wise man is going to walk in integrity, and because of that, he is going to be respected in the end. Now, there have been some wise men and men of integrity that have been looked over, that have been kind of relegated to a footnote in history. But here's the thing, they are not a fool. And it might be that they may not be remembered by a lot of people, but the people who did know them for their wisdom, right? And so it's more important, and we'll get to this in a minute, but it's more important for us to live a wise and a godly life, not for the praise of men, but knowing that in the end, we're going to have a better reputation, we'll have a better name, and we're going to have a better end because of it, right? But whenever we look at the last part of that, it says, "He that is of a perverse heart shall be despised." Well, what do you think of whenever you hear that term, a perverse heart? Any ideas? Okay, wicked and twisted. Something that is perverse or perverted, right? And I don't necessarily have anything written out for this. I'm just kind of thinking and kind of working through this of what kind of a man here that is going to be despised. And the word despised there, it means he's going to be lightly esteemed. People aren't going to think much of him. Right?
Yeah, I was thinking more like, I know we're not talking about him, but more dirty-minded.
Well, the heart and the mind do go together. And so someone, I guess that's, whenever you think perverse, perverted, you think of sexual impropriety and filth and that kind of thing. But with this, a perverse heart is a heart that's seeking after the wrong things, mm-hmm. right? A wise man is seeking after God. A perverse heart is seeking after pleasure, is seeking after cheap thrills, seeking after things that don't last and don't benefit, right? And so he may have a good run at it, but at the end of it all, he's a fool, right? And so he doesn't have a good name for himself. And we've already saw in the book of Proverbs the value of a good name, right? And so for this, we are we're challenged in two ways. In one way, who is it that we are commending? What kind of people are we praising? What kind of people do we see as being praiseworthy? Are they the wise man or the fool? Because whenever we're thinking about praiseworthy, for a while they may get our attention, they may get our adoration even, but we are in bad shape if our adoration, our praise, is toward those who are foolish and ungodly, right? But that's the one way of looking at it. But the other way of looking at it is we need to make sure of the way that we are walking, that we are walking the steps of a wise man, even though sometimes it might seem that we are in the minority, even though we are walking away that it seems that few people do, even whenever it seems that the fools are the ones that are getting platformed, the ones that are getting on stage and getting lauded by the crowds, it may seem humbling or humiliating to walk a godly way. But we find that in the end here, that it is going to be that godly person, that wise man, that will be esteemed, that will be praised, that will be commended, rather than the fool. It's funny how a lot of the ones who are of a perverse heart, they may get attention for a while, right? There's a difference between being commended and getting attention. It's easy to get attention. This is something I've talked about with the girls. They fuss at Melody sometimes. And why is she acting out? Well, it's easier to get negative attention than it is positive attention, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier to get someone to reprimand you than to praise you. That's just the truth of life, right? Yeah. And so there is a lot of people who will get attention, but it is not going to be anything that is lasting or commendable. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a character. It's not going to be a reputation. It's not going to be something that they're going to be fondly remembered for. Yeah, they got attention. They had their moment of fame. And you can think about with all the influencers and TikTok stars and everything, they do something stupid, they get their moment of fame, they're a flash in the pan. But at the end of it, they were foolish. Mm-hmm. Their names rot, the Bible says in another place. But for a person who just diligently does what is right, for the good person who works steadily at their job, that is a good father, a good mother, that's a pillar of the community, that is living a godly life, a commendable life. There's a difference there, right? Yeah. And sometimes we are just kind of going with the flow, allowing life to take us wherever. But I think that we need to be intentional in how we live. The Bible tells us to walk circumspectly. That means that we are paying attention to things going on around us. We are observant. We are watching. We are careful. Okay? And so we need to be paying attention to what manner of person that we are, how we're walking, how we're living, so that we are sending forth the right message and that we are remembered for the right reasons. Okay? That makes sense to everyone? Okay, anybody got anything to add on that? Okay. Verse number 9, I mentioned it last week and said that we were going to get into that this week. We were talking about finances and money and impressing people. And so whenever we get into verse number 9, it says, he that is despised and hath a servant is better than he that honoreth himself and lacketh bread. So the word despised, once again, is to be thought little of. Okay? And so we have in verse number 8, the one that is despised because of how he lives. He has a perverse heart and he is despised. People think little of him. And so what we have in this is that in verse number 8, wisdom exalts in time, right? Wait for a while and that person who has lived a wise life that has a record of wisdom will be esteemed, will be exalted, will be commended. But in verse number 9, we have a man that is despised. He is thought little of. And the reason I'm bringing this contrast, other than just the verses being back to back, is that the person in verse number 8 takes a while, I believe, to gain that reputation, to get that honor, right? And in verse number 9, this person that is despised, the person who is of little honor, the person who is not esteemed, and it says, and has a servant, is better than him that honoreth himself and lacketh bread. What we see in the last part of this is the person who is seeking to honor themselves, the person who is seeking self-promotion. And so the risk here is trying to take shortcuts. Does that make sense? Whenever we're wanting to be esteemed, we're wanting to be exalted, we're wanting people to think well of us, the person in the last half of this is honoring himself. He is bringing attention to himself. He is maybe proud, maybe arrogant. And the reason I said this has to do with finances and things is the way that I see this fulfilled is the person who is boasting himself to be something. The one that is putting on airs, the one that is trying to develop this persona, you know, the one who wants to have the designer clothes and wants to have the expensive jewelry and wants to drive the fancy car to impress people, right? And so it says here, it is better to be despised, to not be esteemed, not to be well remembered for everyone to know you. It's better just to be unknown and have the things that you need or even more than what you need, having a servant, right? It's better to be a nobody and have your needs met than to project yourself to be a somebody while you're starving to death. And we see society is split in that way. The haves and the have-nots, right? And the have-nots want to make themselves look like they have. Mm-hmm. I'll say even some of the most wealthy people, if you start studying millionaires and billionaires, many of them do not flaunt their wealth.
Right.
A lot of them, Jeff Bezos, I think, is the one. He wears the same outfit every day. No, that's Steve Jobs. He was the one that wore the same thing. Same white shirt, same black trousers, same pair of Levi's every day. Drove a Toyota, I think. That was paid for and had 100 and some thousand miles on it. And the reason I'm bringing that out is he isn't having to flaunt what he has to try to convince everyone of who he is and have people to think well of him.
Right.
Right? And so there's a difference there. If we in our minds are trying to impress people, if we are buying things so people will say, look at them, they're doing well. If we are buying things to try to get people to see us and to think well of us, if that is our motive, then for one thing, we're allowing pride to take the driver's seat, mm-hmm. right? But also, we're undermining any kind of success or material blessings because we are seeking them for the wrong reasons in the wrong way. And so in this, it tells us that if we are looking at our possessions as a means to impress people, or if we are living our lives in a means to impress people, we've missed the boat.
Yeah.
Our lives aren't meant to impress people. And so there is a comparison, so to speak, between verses 8 and 9, that this wise man is commended according to his wisdom, not according to his wealth, right? The man is commended according to his works, not according to the way that he has presented himself, not because he has concocted some kind of a false narrative about his life, a false persona here, a facade. Mm-hmm. And so what we come down to with this is we need to concentrate on doing what's right, mm-hmm. on serving the Lord, yeah. on working and doing the things that are right, and letting everything else fall into place. Okay? And so if we are self-serving, self-seeking, trying to make a name for ourselves, then we're probably going at it the wrong way for the wrong reasons, and we're going to get wrong results, right? And it doesn't take much researching to look at the people who try their hardest to be wealthy are usually the people who are the poorest. Mm-hmm. I've seen multiple, just as an example, I've seen multiple kind of documentaries on people who were trying for that rich and famous life online, and they went in debt so far to try to project this certain lifestyle that they didn't have and they couldn't finance, but they were projecting it, they were putting online, and what a mess there was behind all of that. And so at the end of all of this, he that is despised or lowly esteemed and hath a servant is better than he that honoreth himself and lacketh bread. So the quiet and overlooked guy that is feeding his family is in a lot better place than that person who's making all the noise saying, look at me, and bouncing checks. Mm-hmm. People ain't bouncing checks anymore, are they? We don't even... Dating myself. I know my kids haven't. Have you guys ever wrote a check? Never.
What?
Shame. Anyway. I feel old.
Yeah.
I will say it's been a long time since we've bought checks.
We haven't bought since we moved here. Yeah. We write two checks a month, but my mom does it for us. It doesn't sound like it's as easy to transfer funds over there. So if you use one of wires.
I don't know. It's been eight years since we've been there. I don't know.
We've never done that before. You just wrote somebody a check. I mean,
you haven't taken checks here for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, people still use them, but it's
farmers. Yeah.
Farmers,
yeah.
Oh, really?
Older,
okay.
Older people, but no, not really.
Has to be a business check now, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking while you were speaking there about people having things. Just brought back to my memory one time I was driving over through Orlando and somebody had a Hummer vehicle, yeah. And the house was absolutely falling in on itself, but they had this a very fancy expensive vehicle, and I'm thinking, what you paid in that vehicle, you could have bought you a house. No joke.
Another funny one was there was kind of a scuzzy trailer park. Okay, you guys have seen American TV shows, right?
Yes.
A scuzzy American trailer park, and they had a Corvette parked outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. So that kind of reminded me. Yes. Yeah. Kind of reminded me of what you was talking about there.
I mean, they may just like the car, but it's, you know, who are you trying to impress? I mean, I like to have a roof over my head, too.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, don't be seeking attention and trying to impress others, especially not when you're broke.
Yeah.
So better to have stuff and no one be impressed with it than to impress people with stuff you can't afford. Anything else on that? Solomon speaks a lot in Proverbs about finances and priorities and relationships and all those kind of things. And they all kind of intersect, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so verse number 10 says, a righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. And so we have a comparison between the righteous man and the wicked one, wicked man. And it's telling us here that a righteous man, one who respects God, right? We talked about the difference between the fool. Fool said it in his heart, there is no God. So the wise man is someone who understands there's a God, and they understand that God has a way that things work, right?
Yeah.
someone who's seeking to do things God's way. I think that would be a good way to describe who the wise man is. Because there is worldly wisdom and there's godly wisdom. Okay? And it's not talking about worldly wisdom. I know how to game the system. I know how to play all the games and do all these different things. But it's talking about someone who is truly godly wise rather than worldly wise. Okay? And I said all that about wisdom, and we're talking about a righteous man, but they go hand in hand, okay? Righteous in God's mind. Righteous in God's eyes. And so anyway, the righteous man regardeth the life of his beast. It's talking about how this man even cares about animals, right? Even regards animals. But it says that for the wicked man, that his tender mercies are cruel. That tender mercies is talking about compassion. Even what compassion he has on people isn't compassion at all. It's cruelty. And so the wicked have no regard for a life, have no regard for people, have no compassion, have no tender mercies, as it says, on anyone. But the righteous man has compassion that stretches beyond the human race, even to that of animals. Okay? And so it's showing us here what a chasm there is between the two of them, that the wicked man has no regard for anyone, for anything. But the righteous man has regard for everything. Because he understands that there is a God. He understands that there is a giver of life, so he has a respect for everything the life giver has given life to. Does that make sense? You'll find that righteous people, that godly people, don't just care about others and have compassion on others and give toward others, but they're going to take better care of everything in their life and everyone in their life. They're going to treat others better. They're going to treat animals better. They're going to treat possessions better. Does that make sense to you guys? Have you seen this in your own lives, that whenever people are serving the Lord, they have more respect, period? They have more care and compassion and concern, period. For a lost person, they, not a lost person, but for a wicked person.
Yeah.
Not all lost people have no concern for life. And have right. No, that's not what we're talking about. But we're looking at the opposite ends of the spectrum. Okay? But there are plenty of people out there that have no respect toward God, have no concern about God. Therefore, they have little concern for other people. They definitely don't have concern for things that do not benefit or bless them. Mm-hmm. They take lightly the blessings that they've been given, the things that are in their hand, have no respect for even their possessions, right? Mm-hmm. We can go through town and we can look at, for instance, the rubbish on the streets. Okay? You ever see all the rubbish on the streets?
Yeah.
You know what that shows me? That those people don't care for anybody or anything. You say, oh, it's just a little bit of rubbish. That's inconsiderate. It's uncaring. It's disrespectful, right? I lost everyone?
No.
Okay, I have a pet peeve, and this is, you know what I'm going to say? It just came to my mind, so I'm going to say it. But I have a pet peeve. I absolutely hate whenever people do not return their trolleys. That's a test of someone's character. It doesn't really cost them anything. They don't receive anything out of it. They're not going to get in any kind of trouble for not doing it. But yet it's extremely inconsiderate because it blocks parking spaces. It causes employees to have to go out and run out, usually in the rain or whatever. It shows that, okay, I've walked through this entire store, I've collected all these things, can't take it a step further. This is it. I know there are some countries that's different. I know I talked to the ones from South Africa, and they said, okay, you're expected to leave it because there are people who go and, you know,
yeah.
That's like their livelihood. They're going out and wrangling the carts and stuff, or the trolleys. But that's not the case here. Definitely not the case in the States.
Yeah.
But just to kind of reinforce this a bit, okay? Just the idea of concern for other people, okay? What have they done in Ireland to try to combat this problem?
Nothing. You need to use a coin.
You have to have a coin. They want you to be invested in it because they're like, okay, if they do not have to put a coin in this trolley, they're not going to return it. And every now and then I make a few bucks off of it because they don't return their trolleys, and I'll go out and do it. It's like, hey, driving by, does that trolley have a coin in it? Okay, I'm going to return that. I'm going to get the coin back. But what this entire rant is about is it talks about how differently the righteous man thinks from the wicked man. The righteous man is concerned about others. A righteous man is concerned about other living creatures. A righteous man should be taking better care of their possessions.
Yeah.
And in everything that they're doing, they are thinking, hopefully, if they're righteous, they are thinking about others. They're thinking about the consequences of their actions and of their decisions, and it should make a difference. As I was studying this out, there was a commentary I was reading, and they had a story within that commentary, and it was talking about in this one town, it was a mining town, and there was a revival that swept through the town, and a bunch of the miners got saved. Okay? A ton of the miners got saved, and immediately there was a change that took place in them. They were now indwelt by the Holy Spirit. There was some things that they were aware of and their actions and different things, and after this revival was over, they went back to work. Okay? Changed their attitudes, their actions, the way they conducted themselves. And this was during the time that they were still using mining ponies. Okay? And whenever they got back into the mines, they treated the ponies so much different that the ponies didn't know what to do and they couldn't get them to work anymore. Because whenever they were no longer being beat and cussed at and shouted at and hit and all these different things, they were confused. They had never been treated kindly, and they were confused whenever the miners came back and had had such a change that took place in them. And so that is kind of a unique perspective on that. But it also shows, as followers of Christ, that our lives should have a marked difference in it. And because of that, it allows us to be a greater testimony, a greater witness in this world, because kindness is further and further apart now.
Yeah.
Okay? It's harder and harder to find, and it should be found with God's people.
Mm-hmm.
We should be kindly affectionate one toward another, but also toward those who are without.
Yeah.
And in many places, the church has greatly failed in that, in not showing kindness to others. Okay, doesn't matter if they're sinners, doesn't matter if we disagree, doesn't matter what they're, we can still be kind to them. Even to the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the ones who were trying to kill Jesus, he wasn't a jerk to them. Right? So maybe I got off on a tangent there, I don't know. A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. I guess just a final thought on that, with the tender mercies of the wicked or cruel. Have you ever saw someone who would align with that part of the verse where even whenever they were doing something that could have been an act of compassion, they were doing it in such a way that it was cruel? Trying to give something to someone who was homeless or destitute or without, and they did it in a way that humiliated them? It's like, here, I'm going to give you the illustration just came into my mind. And this happened in a church. Okay? There was a family within the church, and this was the church that Les grew up in. There was a family in the church that was very poor. They were having a hard time. They were struggling financially. And it was actually the pastor's wife went out of her way to humiliate them in their suffering, bringing them like half-eaten sacks of beans and leftovers and different things, and doing it in such a way to call attention to their poverty and to the hard time that they were going through. And so even the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. And that's a very discouraging and depressing thought, that was a pastor's wife that did that.
Yeah.
And so that goes to show you that even when someone is feigning compassion, it shows where their heart's at. Mm-hmm. Anything else? I feel like I shouldn't use that illustration. It kind of like sucked the air out of the room for a minute. It's like, that's horrible. Yes, yes, it is. If it helps any, she's dead now. Yeah, it's all kind of worked its way up there. But anyway, verse number 11. He that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. So the instructions here is that a man who will go out and work, who will go out and get his hands dirty, who will go out and earn his bread by the sweat of his brow, as the Lord said in Genesis, says that he is going to be satisfied with bread. And I saw a meme going around not too long ago, and it said, if you want to know how to have a lot of money next week, here's the secret. Get a job. Right? Easier said than done, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, whenever a person is willing to go out and work and earn their bread, willing to go out and do the labor with their hands and this kind of thing, or with their minds, okay, whenever they're willing to go out and labor, then they're going to be satisfied with bread. That is the way that the Lord intended for it to be since all the way back in the Garden of Eden, that man was to go out and earn his bread. And that is the key to satisfaction as well. I believe that there is just something about earning your way, earning your money, that there is a satisfaction in working and providing. Okay, and it's not just like that satisfied feeling that it's saying here. It's talking about actually having a sufficient amount. It's through our labors. But a person who forsakes work to follow after foolishness lacks sense, simply put. He that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. This person has instead of working, they went out to goof off, to fool around, to waste time, to kill time, whatever. And it says that they lack understanding, and really it just means that they don't have any sense. They're going to wonder, why am I poor? Why do I not have enough bread? Why am I hungry? Because you wouldn't work. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10, the context for what was going on there is that it was being reported, hey, the Lord's coming back anyway, and people weren't working or quitting. Even people within the church were expecting the Lord to return at any time because persecution was going on. And they said, oh, this is the tribulation that was promised, like we read about in Revelation. Because there was persecution, because Christians were dying, they said, this is the tribulation, the Lord's return is imminent, and so we're going to stop working. And they went about doing nothing. And they are instructed by Paul in 2 Thessalonians for them to go out and to work with their own hands, to earn their way, to quit going about being busybodies and tattletales and troublemakers and get to work. And it says that if any of them will not work, neither shall they eat. And just maybe this is a political statement, but I think one of the reasons why we have some of the societal ills of today is that people who refuse to work have been given handouts. Mm-hmm. People who have refused to work.
Yeah.
There's a difference between people who can't work,
right,
or can't find work, and those who just won't work.
Right.
Right? And that is a biblical principle, that we should be earning our keep. We should be earning our way. We should be earning our food and laboring. So he that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. Hard work pays off a lot better than foolishness. Anyone got anything to add? Okay. Verse number 12. The wicked desireth the net of evil men, but the root of the righteous yieldeth fruit. Whenever it says they desire the net, they're not desiring fishing nets. They're desiring what was caught in them. They're desiring the increase. They're desiring their gains. Even whenever we talk about money or taxes or paychecks and that kind of thing, you have your net income. Right? That's the part that comes in your net, right? And so whenever it says in verse 12 that the wicked desire the net of evil men, there's the idea of covetousness. They are going about, they are in their foolishness, they're not laboring, they're not caring about others, they're only caring about themselves, and then they start looking around at what everybody else has, specifically what evil men have. So it's the stuff that comes easy, the stuff that has been gotten by the wrong methods, by the wrong reasons. They are looking at these people who are cheating, these people who are doing unscrupulous things, and they're saying, hey, I want to follow in their footsteps. I want to do the things that they're doing. I want to amass wealth the way that they're doing it. Yeah. And so with that, it perpetuates that evil cycle. There's covetousness, there is trickery, there's scheming, there's all these things going on. Scheming and competing and tricking and deceiving and all of this in order to get unrighteous gain. Okay? It's amazing how much energy people will go and will put into and will invest in wicked schemes. Mm-hmm. And trying to find ways to cheat people and to harm people and to game the system and to get things the wrong way. It's amazing how much energy people put into that. All of the criminal gangs and different. I'll tell you, I've watched even people in the shops around here, and the amount of thought that they've put into shoplifting. Amount of effort they put into shoplifting. I don't know, some of those women, I don't know how in the world they can carry 20 kilos worth of groceries in their clothes. But they do.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I've seen it. Watched a couple girls down at Aldi one day. The security guard from Mr. Price or Home Savers, I think, chased them down. And they started emptying out their pockets. I'm like, where did that come from? He had like a shopping trolley. They were teenage girls. Early teens. But anyway, the wicked desireth the net of evil men, but the root of the righteous yieldeth fruit. And so the comparison here, the net is taking a large catch at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Seeking that, and they're looking at that, and they're like, oh, I want to have that big payoff. I want that big payday. Right? I'm going to win the lottery. I'm going to win big over at Boyle Sports. Right? But the last half of that verse, the root of the righteous yieldeth fruit. We may not like this as much, but the idea of root and fruit and all of this is talking about a long and consistent growth.
Right.
Whenever we anchor our lives steady on the rock, whenever we are rooted in Christ in righteousness, whenever we are living godly and doing the things that are right, God will see to it that our needs are met. And that our life is rewarded. We will produce fruit, not just spiritual fruit, but whenever we are living our lives in a good and godly way, consistent in our lives, God will see that we grow and that we produce and that we have what we need. And so you have kind of the contrast there of the one who greedily grabs as much as they can get, or the one who is consistently working and honoring God and serving Him and doing what's right, and allowing God to give them the increase, allowing Him to grow them in their career, maybe, in their finances, in their family, and in their spiritual life, in their reputation in the community. And you just see this nice, natural, consistent growth. I was thinking through today, and this is going to be probably a future sermon or series, who knows, but the thought was brought to me of all of the different I want to say allegories, but they're not allegories. All the different pictures that is used throughout the Bible of Christian growth. Okay? You have all these different ways that it is portrayed in the Bible of a tree yielding fruit, of a flock of sheep, of a body, of all that. You have all these different ways that growth is pictured in Scripture. And I think it's interesting, all these different ways, and most of them do not line up with the way that we try to grow. If we look at church, for instance, how we're trying to, you know, I'd say we, how oftentimes we're trying to grow, and we find there's a much more organic and stable growth that we find in Scripture. Whenever we're talking about Christians growing, a lot of times we're looking at trying to do cookie-cutter processes and trying to make everybody, we do it more like a factory than we do a vineyard or a garden. Okay? So anyway, that's just, I'll put that out there. It might develop into something, it may not, but it's an idea floating around in here. But the last part of that verse is, the root of the righteous yieldeth fruit. While the others are there coveting and wishing that they had what the other one has, the righteous are just working, living, serving the Lord, and the fruit come. Mm-hmm. There's no scheming, no covetousness, none of that that's going on there, but instead it's just going along and allowing God to provide and to grow and all those things. So I'll ask once again, anyone else have anything? Y'all just leave it all up to me, don't you? Okay. So, live faithfully according to godly principles. Let God increase you. Verse 13. The wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips, but the just come out of trouble. Just to make it extremely simple in that verse, the wicked man is getting caught up in his lies. Mm-hmm. But the righteous man, as he tells the truth, has really nothing to worry about. The proverb communicates the importance and safety of honesty. The liar is going to trap himself with lies. That's just the way it goes. No matter how good of a liar a man is, he can't keep track of all of his lies, and he can't foresee all of the complications as he tells one lie to cover up another lie, as he weaves his tangled web, right? It's often been said that a liar must have a good memory. Because you have to remember what you told to who and when, and right? And so in verse number 13, the wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips. That's the things that he is speaking, by the lies that he is telling. And so there's eventually going to be a contradiction. Courts actually rely heavily on Solomon's wisdom here. Have you ever seen whenever they start questioning suspects or start questioning people who are on the witness stand, or those who are there giving a defense for themselves, they ask him the same question over and over and over in different ways, asked by different people, because guess what? They're not going to answer it the same every time. Mm-hmm. If it's a lie. Right. They're going to introduce new details. The details are going to change things. And that's how they can spot a liar, mm-hmm. is whenever the lies don't match up, whenever they get caught up in things. There's red flags that they're looking for, and it's like, this doesn't line up. And so they are trapped, they are snared by their own mouths. But if the person is telling the truth, same details over and over and over, same story over and over and over. And guess what? Because of that, the last part of verse number 13, the just shall come out of trouble. See, whenever we're careful about the things that we say and we are speaking honestly, we're speaking with integrity, the truth comes out. You've got nothing to hide, right? But whenever our mouths are speaking the things that they shouldn't, they're going to get us in trouble. And I know I applied this with lies, but it can be many different things, that whenever we are communicating the things that are not right, the things that we shouldn't be saying, our mouths get us in trouble. Mm-hmm. But whenever we are saying the things that are truthful, whenever we're saying things that are good and that are honest, keeps us out of trouble. I know there was people, whenever I went to school, they just were always running their mouth. And their mouth would get them in trouble. Got them in fights, got their mouth mashed a time or two, right? And so the wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips, but the just shall come out of the trouble. Because the just is paying attention to what he's saying. Mm-hmm. There's not transgression in their lips. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to keep them out of trouble. And I will tell you, your mouth can get you in trouble quicker than anything.
Yeah.
Very quickly. And I say that as someone whose job is to speak. Okay. So, make your words truth and not traps. Verse number 14, and we'll end here. It says, a man shall be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands shall be rendered unto him. Simply put, we reap what we sow, both in word and in works. And so it's telling us here, whatever we're saying is going to come back to us. Whatever we're doing, it's going to come back to us eventually. In the law of sowing and reaping, you are going to reap what you sow. You're going to reap later than you sow. You're going to reap much more than you sow.
Yeah.
And so that's why we have to be careful. Because if we sow wickedness, we're going to reap wickedness. We're going to reap wickedness. And it's not going to come immediately, but it is going to come in abundance.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Whenever we speak wickedness, we start wondering, why are they talking to me like that? Well, how have you been talking to them? Right? And so in verse 14, a man shall... No, verse 14. Yeah. A man shall be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth. So good words, like honeycomb, right? Good words are going to end up coming back in such a way that brings satisfaction rather than regret, right? In comparison to what we saw in verse number 13, that wicked man has snared by his lips, but in verse 14, he is satisfied by his lips. See the difference? And the recompense or the repayment of a man's hand shall be rendered to him. So if we keep that in mind, we're paying attention to how we're treating people, we're paying attention to the things that we're saying, we are compassionate, caring toward those who are around us, we aren't seeking to gain praise and honor by those around us, by what we have, but rather we're living in such a way that is honorable and praiseworthy. And we'll allow God to give us the increase. We'll allow the praise to come to us in due time for the right reasons. See, all these things kind of go together, don't they? Because it's how we live life. Living a good life, living a life pleasing to God. And it's not taking the shortcuts that so many people do. But it's just a consistent, godly life yields good results. So with that, anything to add to it, take away argument, complaint.